Yeah, it's weird how they keep coming back to me. I can't figure it all out. CeeLo, the SEC presidents are meeting down in Destin right now, UofESPN.com. It's unbelievable. This is the big day. This is the day of the heavy lifting, if anything's going to happen down there. Chris, there is a definite chasm that exists out there. These guys can't do anything and just do it. There has to be drama. I'm talking about those who are over college football. There has to be disagreements. There has to be geographical bias. There has to be protectionism, self-sufficiency in its purest form. These guys are going to serve themselves. Chris, when you break this thing down, the SEC is saying, sure, we're pro-playoff. Mike Slive and the presidents today, we all believe, are going to come out and say, we're pro-playoff, but we want the top four teams in the nation to play for it, thus not limiting the league to only one entrant annually in this deal, while leagues like, I believe, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-10 are all on the opposite end of that spectrum, saying, hey, you should have to be a conference champion to be considered one of the top four teams in America. Is that, it's going to get ugly, Chris, isn't it, next 5 or so weeks?
Well, ugly. I mean, everybody's sort of posturing. I love all the accusations about people being self-absorbed, Saban said it, obviously, talking mm-hmm. about Delaney. Delaney, though, sort of mm-hmm. started it, a few weeks ago, talking about, a team that doesn't win this division, and he has no respect for that team. Well, I'm of the mind that if we're going to go down this road,
mm-hmm.
if we're going to truly have a playoff, which I think we are, Tony, I'd be shocked if we come out of this mm-hmm. with anything other than a 4-team playoff. But if we're going to do it, let's do it. I mean, what are you solving? What are you solving if you go in and say, okay, we're going to have 4 teams playoff on the field at the end of the season to determine our national champion? But to get into this playoff, you got to do X, Y, or Z. You got to win your conference championship, or it's the top 3 conference champions. What happens if 1 year if everybody in the Pac-12 is just real average, and everybody in the mm-hmm. in the Big Ten is real average,
mm-hmm.
everybody in the ACC is pretty average? Do you penalize? Let's just for the sake of argument, the Big 12 and the SEC. If Oklahoma and Oklahoma State next year are just great, and they play, and one wins, a close game, and one's 12-0, and one's 11-1, and then Alabama and LSU do it again, okay? I mean, do you say, okay, one of you three, or two, in some cases, aren't going because we've got these rules that says that the top 3 conference champions, or all the conference champions, have to go? To me, if you're going to go down that road and we're going to have a playoff, let's have a playoff. Let's have the 4 teams that are the best schools in the country that year play it off. Now, I understand the skeptics who say, well, how do you pick the 4 teams? Isn't that really subjective? Well, yeah, it's subjective. I mean, everything's subjective. The whole process is subjective, unless you're going to go to a 16-team playoff, which I don't see that happening anytime soon. But, last year, Oklahoma State thought it got screwed, right? 2004.
Exactly.
2004, Auburn thought it got screwed, right? 2006, Michigan thought it got screwed. You're always going to have teams, whether it's the top 2, the top 4, the top 8, who think they get screwed. If you go to a 14 playoff, there's going to be number 5 and number 6.
That's right.
Going to be crying foul. So however you do this, there's going to be some second guessing. There's going to be teams who feel like they deserve to be in and aren't. I just don't think if you're going to have a playoff that you go into it and put a bunch of restrictions, or any restrictions or restraints for that matter, into it. Let's get the 4 out there, whether we do it by committee, whether we use the BCS standings and tweak those standings to include a more heavily weighted strength of schedule component, which I'm in favor of that. I think, to me, that's the best way to go, because you force teams to play more marquee non-conference games, okay? In the SEC, the Pac-12, everywhere. I like that idea. and then you come out with those standings, you know, again, with the added strength of schedule component in there, and whoever the top four are, those four play that year for the championship.
But what happens, Chris, to the bowl system? Let's say this four-team deal happens. How does the bowl system cease becoming the NIT?
Well, I think you still can incorporate it. I think the talk still is the two semifinal games will be rotating or alternating bowls. Rose Bowl and Orange Bowl 1 year, the Sugar Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl the next, and then you still have all the other bowls, just like you do now. I mean, right now, look at the way the system is now. You have the four BCS games, and then you still have all the other bowls. You know, and I hate the way it's all spread out. I hate the fact that, you know, you have to wait to January the 10th or January the 11th to play the national. I mean, you're playing some bowls on December 27th.
Silly.
26th, some even earlier than that.
Yes.
But I still think you can have the bowls. I don't think you do away with the bowl games. I mean, because where's Tennessee going to go if they're 7-5? And where's Auburn going to go, you know, at 8-4? They're not going to be a part of the national title picture. But at 7-5, 8-4 in the SEC, you know, whatever you are, then you deserve to go to a bowl somewhere. So I still think there's a place for the bowls. And I think it's also, I like the idea of bidding out the title game. You know, 1 year it's in Indianapolis. The next year it's in Los Angeles. The next year it's in New Orleans. The next year it's in Atlanta. You know, it's not going to be the same four places every time. Anybody that has a dome or anybody that has a state-of-the-art stadium in a warmer climate will have a chance to get it.
Visit today with Chris Lowell on the program. You know, the one thing I worry about, though, is just once you you dip your toe in this water, I don't understand why they don't just take, and I was thinking about this the other day, figure out a way to get some life back into New Year's Day, which we've lost a lot of the tradition of this deal.
I agree.
And I don't know if you can do that in this plus one deal if you play two of those games. My problem right now, and I'm like you, is that now we have a bowl week where we spread this thing out, and I find myself as an enthusiast of the game. I don't know about you, Chris, but I find myself watching less and less and less of it, and I wonder how they're going to execute. Let's say it is a four-team deal. How do you think they would execute a four-team playoff? Would they play back-to-back games on one day like the NFL does on a non-NFL day? Is that what they would do?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe you play two in one day. Maybe you play, you play on New Year's Day. And you
right.
play one at 4 o'clock and one at 8 o'clock.
That's what I'd love to see.
You know, I think that, to me, has very much a feel of the NFL Conference Championship games. You know, you do that same deal with the conference. You have that Sunday where you play the NFC and then the AFC or vice versa, and then you play with the Super Bowl. It's 2 weeks. But I think with this, you know, it's all that day. You sit down on that day, and that day is the semifinal games of college football. Everybody knows that you got 8 hours of great football to watch. And then, you know, the two winners, the teams that survive that day are going to play in a week, you know, for the national championship. I mean, to me, that makes a lot of sense. And yes, you got two different cities or two different bowls involved on that semifinal day. But I still think that's the way to do it. And you still have, if you want to play that, you know, the new Big 12 SEC game on the second, of course, they're saying they're going to play it on the first. You know, maybe you play it earlier in the day. You play it at 1 o'clock. But I agree that it seems like we've gotten away a little bit too much from New Year's Day and the whole bowl process. I like watching the marquee games on New Year's Day, but I don't have a problem with having a couple after, one or two after, or a few before. I just hate spreading out so long. We got to find a way to play these games that count so much, you know, waiting so long to play them after the season. I mean, there's not a sport in the world where you play your last regular season game and then wait 40 days to play the most important game of the season. That's asinine.
48 days, right?
Oh, yeah. Last year, I think, for Alabama, because remember, Alabama did not play in the SEC championship game.
That's right.
So its last game was, what, November the 24th? and they played the championship game on January. I mean, you're going a whole month. You're talking about three different months. November, December, you don't play at all. And they, I think the game last year was, well, the 9th to the 10th.
It's moronic.
It doesn't make any sense. And it's bad for the game. And I think that's why sometimes we don't get great games. I mean, the last two games have not been quote-unquote great football games. I mean, LSU clearly, you know, just I don't know where they were offensively in that game last year. And even the Auburn-Oregon game, you know, everybody talked about that being a 41-38 game with both of those offenses. I remember going down the elevator with Pat Dye after the game, and he sort of course, he was happy Auburn had won, but he's shaking his head. He says, you know, when you go that long in football and you don't play, you know, you don't have any real live contact, you don't play, you play, and all of a sudden you take 40-some days off. He says it just kills your offense. It kills your rhythm. It kills your timing. It kills any kind of momentum you've had offensively. He said, and it probably, if anything, helps the defenses a little bit more. And I think we've sort of seen that in that championship game the last few years is the offenses are more hit and miss, and the defenses are probably a little bit more on top of things.
Why don't we, and this is the thing, you want to do this and compare this to other sports, why don't we play the World Series around Christmas time? Why don't we play the finals in the NBA in mid-August? How would that feel? Why don't we, it's silly. I mean, think about that for a second. Who else would do that? And then they wonder why, and here's the real whole reason they're talking about it, Chris, is those TV ratings tanked. The last couple of years, I mean, people are just repudiating this spread-out system. We're not alone in feeling detached from it. Chris, do you believe that they're going to iron this thing out in Chicago, or do you think this is going to go on and drag out until Delaney and they have some kind of compromise with the Pac-12, the ACC, and also the Big Ten?
No, I think we're going to have an answer June the 20th, June the 21st. I think we'll have an answer then. I think we'll know what exactly the model's going to look like. You know, the Big 12, I think you said, the outset of a conversation, I think they're on board with the SEC.
Yes.
They want it to be the top four teams. And I think the Big 10 would compromise and say, okay, three conference champs, the highest rated conference champions, and then a wild card. And then I guess if you had to settle for something, we'll see who gets what. You could live with that. I still don't like it because I think there's going to be, if you take 10 years, you know, of this format, I think there's going to be at least 2 years in those 10 years where you're going to have, in more than one conference, you're going to have two great teams, two really deserving high-powered teams that everybody wants to see on the field and play it off. I mean, go back to 06. Let's not make this, you know, I know this is SEC country. Let's not make this an SEC thing. Go back to 06. Ohio State and Michigan play a classic game at the end of that season. Two great football teams. Agreed? And now Michigan goes on and sort of lays an egg in the bowl game. But had you had a playoff that year, no question Michigan and Ohio State deserve to be in it. Florida obviously won the championship that year. So, you know, Florida should have been in it. And then you had, I think you had LSU at number four. You had Wisconsin, I think it was five or six. So you had a couple teams there from the same conferences that were bunched right there at the top. Remember that LSU team in 06 closed the season. They probably were as good as anybody. They destroyed Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl. So what I would hate to see, Tony, is a situation maybe like that, or I can't think of another year off the top of my head, where you've got two conferences, and both of those conferences have great football teams, but we're only going to get to see, because you have to be conference champions, or you only have one wild card spot, one of those teams makes it, and the other team doesn't.
It's going to be... And you know what's going to be fun about this? What I'm going to like about if they go the route of the four best teams, you're still going to get, on the day after the selection of the teams, the fifth and sixth team are still going to be highly upset.
Sure they
are. It's not going to take... But I like it. I like that, though.
Was screaming bloody murder last year.
I like it. Chris, that's a part of the college football experience. That's subjective.
Hey, we have, 68 teams in hoops now? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And they're still talking.
And we still hear every year the 69th and the 70th and the 71st. Yeah. I mean, you know good and well last year, had Tennessee not laid that egg against Ole Miss in the tournament and got into the semifinals of the SEC tournament, and then lost the respect. I don't know who they were going to play next, Vandy or whomever, and then lost a respectable game and did not get into the NCAA tournament. They've been screaming bloody murder around here, okay? And you got 68 teams. My point is, there's always going to be a few teams left out, whether you have 2, 4, 8, or 68. There's always going to be teams that think they should be in because the process, in some way, shape, or form, is always going to be subjective to a degree.
Chris, is the SEC going to go with this 6 fixed opponents, one permanent from the other division, one rotator schedule format, or do you believe that they're going to wait till later to decide what they're going to do in terms of scheduling?
Well, I think they're going to make a decision on how they're going to do it, whether it's 6-1-1, 6-2. The 6-1-1 format was, I think, what everybody thought was going to happen. Now, you got LSU fighting that really hard. Right.
Why?
Because they don't like the honestly.
Yeah.
They don't like the fact that their cross division opponent every year is Florida, thinking, all right, Florida's not going to be down for long because it's Florida, and Alabama's cross division opponent is Tennessee, and Tennessee right now has had, what, 3 losing seasons in the last 4 years. That's the big reason. I think Joe Leva, their AD, had some type of comment yesterday where he referenced Tennessee. You know, he said, hey, if Alabama and Tennessee want to play, then maybe they play as a non-conference game. Here's my deal with that. It's all cyclical. Who knows? You know, Tennessee 10 years from now might be a top 10 team. Alabama 10 years from now, is Saban still going to be there? Are they going to hit another wasteland? What's LSU going to be like? We don't know. This league, if it's proven one thing over the last 20, 30, 40 years, is it's so cyclical. But right now, everyone's trying to, as you said, they're trying to line up and make sure that they can get everything they can get before this new 10-year schedule goes into place in 2013. What we might see, Tony, is we might see a format decided upon that they're going to go 6-1-1 or 6-2 and then still not have a schedule that's in place until later on. Does that make sense? For instance,
yes.
Tennessee may not know if it's 6-1-1 or 6-2 who they're going to play. There's been talk of the cross-division games instead of being home and away every year. For instance, Tennessee plays, let's say this, who is it this year? It's Mississippi State. So they play at Mississippi State this year, and then Mississippi State would come to Tennessee the following year. The talk now is you just do one game every year. That way you're playing those teams more often every 6 and 10 years. So you play maybe State 1 year, Ole Miss the next, Arkansas the next, Alabama the next, and then you start it all over again after 6 years.
Chris, what else is newsworthy that's come out of there this week in your mind?
Well, I mean, the scheduling, obviously, the opponents. I think Spurrier, you know, continues to push, and I commend him for it. I mean, he's you know, how many coaches do you hear stepping up to play and saying, hey, I'm willing out of my pocket to spend $300,000 or $400,000 to help these kids get more money?
Yep. He says $300 a game. He wants me to get $300 a game, right? Isn't that what he said?
Well, he's actually saying now up to $300,000 or $400,000, you know, you pay kids. Not per kid, but total. And, you know, hey, it's never going to pass because the NCAA won't pass it. Because they're never going to be a party to, quote-unquote, paying kids a stipend. Now, they may figure out a way to incorporate it into the scholarship You know, right now you get room, tuition, and board. But in theory, and I'm 100% on board with what the head ball coach is saying here. More than ever, coaches are making out like bandits. I mean, the average
crazy
coach now in the SEC makes more than $3 million a year. In fact, I think before Petrino got the boot, I think seven coaches made $3 million or more per year. Okay? So more coaches do than don't. Look at what the schools are raking in TV money. The SEC's getting ready to renegotiate their contract with ESPN, with CBS. It's going to be astronomical what the new contract's going to look like. Everyone's making out and rolling in cash, but whom? The players. You know, why not pay them, or why not see to it that if they want to fly their mom and dad in every weekend, you know, if they want to bring in their best friend for a ball game, if they want to take them out and have a nice dinner after a game, you know, find a way to do that. Now, how do you manage it? People are always going to be looking for ways to cheat and stretch things. I understand that, you know, but I still think, in theory, college sports, the revenue-producing sports, i.e. football and basketball, have to find a way to take care of these kids, because the money just keeps getting higher and higher, okay? The salaries keep getting higher and higher. And these players, I think more and more, Tony, are going to be prone to rebel because they see that. They're not stupid.
I want to say it.
They understand what's going on. And I think you could have some type, I don't know, I say a revolution. I
want to say it.
In the purest sense. But sooner, something's got to give, and something will give if they don't start getting, I'm talking about the players, at least a little chunk of the pie.
They need a tea party in the worst way. You know, this Yuma guy who's talked about trying to get them with one voice, I'm telling you, the next 10 years in this sport, the time that we're alive right now, people are going to look back on it and go, man, this is seminal stuff that these people live through.
See, these kids like A.J. Green
gets
suspended 4 games because he sold his jersey.
That's stupid.
Okay?
Stupid.
Sold his jersey. And then you got schools, and then, again, these kids turn around and they see every Saturday A.J.
Right.
Green, what was he, number one? I think he was number one.
Right.
He sees 10,000 number one jerseys in the stands that they're selling for $50 a pop. Okay? Doesn't have his name on the back, but it's still his jersey, number one. And then on top of it, you know, they're seeing schools. In the SEC right now, there's probably, and some of them have quit paying because their payments are in full, but if you threw Tennessee and Mississippi State and Auburn, and threw some of the basketball coaches in there, you could take about 5 or 6 schools that are paying somewhere around $20 million for coaches not to coach. You know, former coverable Sylvester Croom. Houston Nutt, I think, got somewhere around $3 million.
It's sickening.
These kids see this, and they say, you know, wait a minute. My school is paying, if you're Tennessee, my school is paying Derek Dooley $2.2 million. They paid Philip Fulmer $6 million to go away. They paid Bruce Pearl $1 million to go away. That's not even counting assistants. You know, and if you're a kid like a Tyler Bray or a Derrick Rodgers, or any of them, the Rick Rogers, and they're pumping out your jerseys and making all kinds of money, and you're not getting anything, and your mom's maybe working 2 jobs, you're from a single parent family, you don't have any way to get your mom up for the game,
right?
You can't go out and have a nice meal after games. You like to get some of your homeboys up, but you got nothing in your pocket unless you're going out with your hand and trying to get it from boosters, which we all know kids do. Sometimes you can't blame them when they don't have anything. So I'm 100% on board with Spurrier's idea. It's incumbent upon the schools, the NCAA, to find a way to get these kids more money. And listen, they all come from different backgrounds. Some of them come from well-to-do backgrounds, but you know as well as I do, Tony, so many of them come from disadvantaged backgrounds.
It's
they don't have anything. And all of a sudden, you know, they're generating millions of dollars for a university, and they're getting nothing out of it. I understand I understand the person on the other side of the fence will say, wait a minute now. They're getting a college scholarship. They're getting tuition. They're getting a chance to go to school and get a degree that not everybody, and they do. And that's why it's important they take advantage of that. But when you start talking about millions upon millions of dollars, it's out of whack that they're not getting a little some of that.
CeeLo, appreciate you, brother, like you can't even imagine. Keep it up, my friend. We look forward to seeing your work and your baseball offering this weekend. The world of local tournament baseball will never be the same when the Smokies take the field, CeeLo.
It's the most fun I have. I've been to, as we've talked about, Super Bowls, World Series, championship, and national championship games. Nothing's more fun than going and watching kids play for the purity of the sport.
No, absolutely. CeeLo, I love it, man. Take care.
See you, buddy.
You all see that guy coaching kids. He's been coaching my son's baseball team, and those kids love him. And he gets on them now. CeeLo's hardcore now on a baseball diamond. He wants it done right. Charlie Manuel, he is not. I mean, the guy coaches discipline. Charlie Manuel, that clown is not. We have so much to talk about right now based on what's... Did you hear CeeLo say that Joe Oliva, LSU's AD, is against the 6-1-1 plan, meaning 6 teams in your division, 1 rotating opponent, and 1 fixed opponent? Joe Oliva at LSU says, why should we be saddled with Florida when Alabama gets weak Tennessee every year? Did you hear that? Did you hear that?